Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Who was on horseball's detail? Well, yeah. You know, look, there was a demand, Joe, and it took a while for technology to meet it, but it was met.
See? He gets it.
And call this guy episode gets horseballs. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Aki's here. Horror Acolyte is here. Dave K is here. Chris is here. Pernell is here. How is everybody doing?
Woo! About drink some water.
I'm doing pretty good. I'm cooking. Good.
What you cooking?
Goes.
What? Why?
Because today I'm going to hurt myself for everyone's amusement.
Oh, someone else is going to eat on mic? Fuck yeah. I was starting to feel bad because I ate before I got on here.
This is going to be later.
What
on
I'm
in
doing
the show.
Is stupid.
Yeah, she has some hot sauce.
Oh, you're doing that tonight?
Yeah, I'm doing that tonight. It's near the end after I'm done with my reviews, because afterwards I don't think I'll be able to do my reviews. I'll probably be getting sick.
But that's part of the fun. You got to do it.
So wait, hold on. Let's DJ, roll that back. Why are you doing this?
No, don't ask questions. Just let her do it.
because I'm really stupid, and I talked myself and everyone else into me doing this. Just me doing this. I don't know why.
You did.
Yeah, so I have a hot sauce in my house that Joe bought that's over 2 million Skull units.
It's I encourage her not to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I think everyone tried to encourage me not to do this, and I plowed through anyways because I don't know. It's one of like the top 10 hot sauces on the planet, and it's made out of the single hottest pepper in existence. And yeah, I'm stupid. Basically, is what this boils down to, and that's why it's happening, because I have the IQ of a turnip.
Does hot sauce, does that have a name? Like, what do they call it?
The Last Dab, I think.
Oh, right? Shit, it's a Hot Ones hot sauce.
Yeah.
Okay.
And while
the way you were describing it, I thought it was going to be one of those, like a hot sauce you buy on the boardwalk, and it's called like "fuck you and everyone you care about," and then there's like just like the label is a guy pointing a gun at you.
Well, you know the hot chip challenge and Satan's toe and all that shit. Yeah, they're all around the same heat level.
Okay.
So yeah, no, I don't blame anyone on The Last Dab for not on that show for the reactions to The Last Dab, because fuck my life.
I think I've done that point, challenge multiple times, and I will never tell people to do it.
Yeah,
no, it doesn't. I mean, unless you outright burn off your taste buds, which I heard you can do, I don't really think you just get used to it. Your body will always react the way it's going
to
react.
Like hot ones,
you can get
also
used to hot sauce.
You can.
I mean, I've gotten used to them.
Tolerance. I think you build a heat tolerance to a certain point.
Yeah, because I used to fire sauce from Taco Bell used to burn my mouth real bad, and that's maybe 1,000-ish Scoville units at most. Now I'm regularly eating 30,000, 40,000 Scoville unit hot sauces, and I'm fine. It doesn't bother me.
Maybe I just misinterpreted it, because I know I do eat hotter stuff than I used to eat. But it feels less like I'm going, oh man, this is nothing, and more just like my body's reacting. I just don't care anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't. I have to keep upping it, because it just does nothing eventually for me.
The best part of all of this is while you suffer with ungodly heat in your mouth, I'll be over here eating a dirt parfait. Delicious.
Put some Tabasco on that thing.
And chocolate pudding.
Tabasco that crumbles. Thing.
Fuck that.
The Tabasco, the Tabasco that thing. Solidarity with your show mate.
Hell no. I'm on Joe's side. I've got some gas station chocolate chip cookies right here.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
I've got I body just had, armor.
Ice cream and some Entenmann's lemon cake earlier.
Ooh, I love that lemon cake.
Yeah, me too.
I'm drinking body armor.
Body armor. I love body armor. What flavor?
Frozen berry.
That's good.
I was really hoping that Joe's dirt parfait would have been like, yeah, I'm eating dirt out of the garden like a fucking degenerate.
He didn't tell you how like he made the dirt burn. Parfait.
I'm in the compost pile. He didn't tell you what he used
to make the parfait.
Coffee grind. Could
have come from the compost pile.
You could hear that cricket just chirping all the way down.
I mean, we have a button for that.
This is the episode. This is the episode where Joe admits he has pica, apparently.
Oh, Dave, I got a new one for you, by the way.
Wrestlepalooza, bitch.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And of course.
I was about to say it's not on par with El Dandy is still in there, but it's not bad. That's solid.
Yeah, I'm gonna warn you guys, me and Dave, we're the evil ones with the soundboard.
Who else has the soundboard?
anyone?
Exactly.
All of you have the soundboard. But
do they have all the other weird servers that you made specifically for things like
Raggedy Bitch?
And
yes, yes. What? What the fuck was that?
how much does this guy weigh? I'm short. I'm bald. I can't get any hoes. I've been fighting my entire life.
See, that's what we could do go on like Wednesdays.
This. We could go on like this.
In wrestling.
And often Saturdays.
Yeah, we have problems. Should we do reviews? We have a bunch of reviews. I feel like we shouldn't putz around too much tonight. Should we dive into these?
Let's do it.
Maybe.
No, nope, like, maybe. Like, he's not first.
Maybe.
Like, he's trying to get some more.
He's considering some putzing.
I'm waiting for a
fucking yeah.
No.
But instead, I'm getting.
I'm gonna need you to fuck off, sir.
Fucking no.
You would have been getting fucking no if we didn't cut that one from the soundboard.
Fucking potentially is your decision.
That's unbelievable.
Fucking potentially.
All right, let's get into these. First game to talk about tonight, Story of Seasons Grand Bazaar, developed by Marvelous, published by Marvelous USA and XSEED, released August 27th. Switch and PC for $49.99. Switch 2 for $59.99. Switch players can upgrade to the Switch 2 version for $10. Build your farm in Zephyr 10 and breathe new life into the once famous bazaar. Set up your stall to sell produce and goods from the crops and animals you raise on your farm, and meet charming townsfolk to befriend and romance as you help the close-knit community thrive. Purnell, what is going on at the Grand Bazaar?
So, in this game, you play as an unnamed character that you yourself will name and craft using a light but effective character. Purnell.
Okay, so you're playing Purnell. Got it.
Yeah, I am playing as Purnell in this case. Usually I will choose a girl and do all the random shit there, but for some reason I decided this game I just wanted to be myself on the farm. And I've been enjoying it. It also helps that there's a black skin color I can use for my character, so that's nice.
Is there a feminine version of Purnell, like Purnella? Will that work?
I feel like I've seen it before, but only in like looking up versions of names, but I don't think I've never met anyone with that name before. I can tell you that much. I've actually
just add an E on the end, just Purnell.
Yeah, but it doesn't change the fact that if I've not seen a person or come across it even online with the name, in my mind is not real. It's just me making up a word like Octagongo or something. It's not a real name. I just made it up. But I went with Purnell, a man who farms in the town of Zephyr. And what ends up happening is you take up a job offer for a new farmer in this particular town. You show up, you are greeted by quite possibly one of the most overzealous mayors I've ever seen in a game. think dude's awesome though, so I'm okay with it. And he tasks you with revitalizing the farm. Sound familiar? Well, it should, because that seems to be the plot of almost all these kinds of games. But not saying that in a derogatory way, because spoiler early on, I do think this game is really good. But once you're set up, you're basically taught the ins and outs of running a farm, and I'll talk about that shortly. But with the grand goal being to revitalize the town's Grand Bazaar, which happens once a week. And at the Grand Bazaar, you're able to make sales and make things. But I'll talk about that later, too. So, you are given the ability to do a number of things that are all meant to eat up your time that runs at a constant tick throughout the day. You typically wake up around 9 or 10 a.m., but if you go to bed late, you'll probably wake up later. I won't know because I refuse to go to bed late. I'm responsible. You wake up, and you are given access to a few things. For example, you have a plot of land, which is where you will engage in the series' titular farming aspects. You can take crumb seeds, plant them in the ground after digging up the ground with a hoe. You can plant the seeds, water the seeds with a watering can, fertilize the plants to potentially get better results, wash and repeat over a series of days, and then boom, you've got crops of varying qualities and types that will grow up from the ground, and you can pick them and basically potentially sell them or cook with them. Every time you do any of these features or perform any of these functions, your stamina will decrease. Get too tired out in the streets, you will pass the heck out and wake up later to losing a lot of time in your life. Don't pass out. Get adequate rest with stamina. You can get extra stamina by taking a shower during the day once per day, or you can eat various foods that will replenish your stamina, or sometimes also give you passive buffs. I won't talk about what the buffs are, but I will anyway, because whatever. Things
you know,
like,
you know what, max stamina increase. We just got a sub buff. Thank you, Sir Khaled, for coming by with your 14th month. Always appreciate you being here, hanging out. Enjoy the kitty cats. Enjoy the emotes. Enjoy those bonus contest entries as Ultimate Games hooked us up once again. And we'll talk about that later. But for now, Grand Bazaar going on there again.
Where was that? Oh, yeah. So things like maximum stamina increases or like friendship buffs, which, again, I'll talk about shortly, and other such things. You can take crops. You can sell them in town to the nearby shop for money. You'll also end up going to town to meet various townsfolk throughout the day. You'll befriend any and almost all of them. They have friendship meters, which as you talk to them and engage with them, that will increase, eventually giving way to potential romance. Various side quests will perform with these guys too. They also increase your results with them while and ultimately getting you bonus items as well. So it doesn't hurt you to engage in supporting these people. As the game progresses, you'll meet more and more people, thereby making you have to choose who you want to engage with. Saturdays is the day that I mentioned earlier about the Bazaar Day. And that is probably one of my favorite features in this bad boy, because on Bazaar Day, you want to take as many items as you've been able to get from the farm or from your livestock at the farm, which I didn't talk about, but you basically get livestock items like eggs and milk and whatever. You take them all to the bazaar. You open the stall during certain periods of the day. There's two shifts. And during this time, customers will be walking by your stall, of which you have a number of stands where you can place items for sale. You run up to them as close as you can anyway, and you ring your bell. And if they're within the vicinity of your bell ring, they will take interest of your stall and inquire about an item, which will show up above their head in the form of a picture. You have the item, dig it out of your stock, slap it on the shelf. They'll run up and they will buy it off of you by pressing A when they reach your stall. You're trying to get as many people to come to your stall to buy as many things as possible, shuffling your inventory accordingly to draw the best crowd and get the most sales, which will drive, again, the main plot. Because the more you sell and the better you do on bazaar days, the more people will be enticed to come to your bazaar and open up stalls, leveling up your bazaar, Grand Bazaar rank, to becoming the greatest bazaar the world has ever seen, or at least your particular save file has ever seen. In addition to just selling at the bazaar, though, other people will open up stands. You can use them to buy things like various techniques like double jumps and things of that nature. You can buy items for like fashion purposes, livestock, all sorts of things. It's just a matter of getting to the point where you've been able to help people open up new stalls to make their wares available so that you in turn could consume them with your hard-earned moolah. You'll also unlock various additional areas on the map that you can travel to, which will include their own events and engaging with nature sprites to get happiness points, just getting more materials. And there's also elements such as crafting that can come into play, because in this game, that is how you get better equipment, amongst other things. The game takes advantage of wind quite a bit, most notably for the game's windmills. When you go up to a windmill, once you've unlocked them anyway, you are able to apply various items to various recipes to produce results. And each of those results runs on a certain amount of time to produce. Windier days will make the windmill blow faster, resulting in your products growing faster or completing faster. So you might want a time when you make high time yielding items to get better results. Certain days of the week, you might get a windstorm or a tornado. If you don't protect your grocery or your crops, they might blow away and you'll lose a lot of money. Put up windscreens to protect against that. So that's another thing you got to worry about. There's a lot of stuff to manage in this game. And there's not a lot of time, not enough time to necessarily do it all. Though, I guess if you're playing at a leisurely rate and you're okay with waiting until the next year, and eventually, for example, miss or fail at an event on the calendar, you can just do it again. But for the most part, despite the game feeling leisurely, if you're anything like me, you'll still feel like you're pressed for time. And that's okay, because that's something I brought on myself. When the truth is, the game is meant to be what you make of it. Do you want to do a lot of farming that day? Knock yourself out. Want to spend your entire day talking to residents? Knock yourself out. Exploring the mountains? Well, that's an option too. But the important part about any of those choices is that they all feel endearing and engaging. The game never felt boring to me. At the beginning of the game, I definitely felt like I had more time than I needed to do what I wanted to do. But as things opened up, I did feel as though I had to make good choices who I wanted to talk to. I had to zero in on specific party members, or not party members, on specific townsfolk that I wanted to make more, affectionate towards me or whatever. That's the name of the game in Story of Seasons. And I think this game does a very good job of portraying all of that. And all of the characters are actually pretty friendly, too. At first, they seem kind of stupid and bland for the most part, barring my one friend character, June. But over time, even the characters that I didn't care particularly about started to grow on me. And next thing I do, I wanted to help as many people as I could earn those happiness points. So I think that means the game is doing a great job. It makes me want to keep playing it and making interactions with more people happen. I like this game. I haven't played a game like this in a while, despite how common they are. But I'm glad that this was the one that got me back into it, because the best way to put it is I was late to this episode, a first in a very long time. If you want to ask why I was late, well, the first reason was because I had my event. But the second reason was, rather than getting ready for the show after the event, I said, I want to play more Story of Seasons. So, whoops. But you, I think this game is a lot of fun.
Bitch.
And I do it again.
But question this game is for you. Publishers were kind enough to supply us a Switch copy of the game. They do have a Switch 2 upgrade for $10. Did you invest in that?
Honestly, I didn't even know there was an upgrade worth considering. I just was playing the game I got on the Switch 2, and it works just fine. Like, if there's an upgrade, I don't know what it's upgrading, but maybe I'll consider it.
I wonder.
On the store page, the Switch 2 version features higher resolution and frame rates, along with Joy-Con 2 mouse controls.
Well, I will say, if you're into the sort of thing where you think your game has to have the best bloom possible or whatever, knock yourself out. I will say, as a person playing on the Switch 2 with the Switch 1 code that was given to me, it looked perfectly fine. I didn't have any weird frame rate issues, and I didn't feel as though the performance suffered in any way whatsoever. I was fine with it. So if you want it, knock yourself out, but I don't think it's a need at all.
I wonder if that's one of those things that they provide if you've got the NSO subscription.
If you have, they'll just give it to you for free?
Right, as long as you've got the subscription. Like, that's how they've been doing with all mine.
I think they're only doing that with a couple of, like, first-party Nintendo ones. I don't know.
It's
based on game. I'm sure it's based on publisher. This one is just a $10 upgrade. I don't see it included in anything else. So,
I'll be honest, in the sense that I genuinely don't think the upgrade is particularly necessary. I don't even see the need to play this game with a mouse. Like, the games were always meant to be played with a controller. What is a mouse going to do? But I mean, I'm sure someone will want to pay $10 to find that out. With that said, though, the one gripe I have, which is not a bad thing per se, it's just a me thing, is that storage. I wish I could upgrade my storage quicker. But when you do get storage upgrades, you'll be glad you did, because, oh my God, I want to carry everything at all times in anticipation of all the things I think I might need to make at any given point in time. So it gets to be a little heady when I'm trying to pick flowers. I need copper, I need silver, I need ore and wood and, you know, rocks and everything. Carrying 3 cups of tea. Like, I can't do it all. But that is the nature of the beast, to zero in on something and get it done right. So,
well, since you mentioned storage, I might as well mention storage too. On the Switch, the game is 3 gig. Switch 2, it is 7.7. Switch and PC, the game is $50. Switch 2, it's $60. What are your thoughts on Story of Seasons Grand Bazaar?
An easy recommended buy. This game is a wonderful time, and I feel as though if you like games of the cozy farming nature, you could do way worse than this.
Sounds good. All right, next up, Casebook 1899, the Leipzig Murders. I'm sure I fucked. Developed and published by Home and Iron Studio, released September 4th on Steam for $17.99. I'm doing great tonight. Plays a sharp-witted detective in late 19th century Leipzig, Germany, in this retro pixel art point-and-click adventure. Search for clues, question suspects, and piece together evidence on your deduction board to solve 4 gripping murder cases. Dave K., you check this one out. Tell us about Casebook 1899.
Thank you, Joe. I will. First of all, hello, everyone. Hello, gentle, sweet listener, and welcome back to SML, the Solving Male Loneliness Podcast, offering insight on incels. Anyway, I'm here to review 1899 Casebook, The Leipzig Murders, in which you play a German detective solving the murders of German people in Germany, Leipzig specifically.
That sounds like that's within the jurisdiction, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know how far the German Empire spread in 1899, but they managed to keep it pretty tightly packed in Leipzig in this game. The game takes place over 4 cases and uses the framing device of the detective talking about each case with his landlady in some kind of weird phantom zone that is supposed to be her sitting room. They use a dark mode, like inverted color effect on these scenes for no real reason. It looks cool, but it's kind of a weird choice because they don't do it anywhere else in the game. Playing the game is pretty straightforward if you're used to point and clicks. You, as the detective, can look at or interact with different game environments to find inventory items or clues, which he notes in his journal. Combining clues in the journal grants more dialogue options when questioning persons of interest, and you can also take those combined clues and form deductions, which inform your understanding of the case. This has become a very common mechanic in like detective-y mystery-solving games, whether they're point-and-click or not. I blame Frogwares for doing this to everyone. Once you've made enough deductions, you can connect them into a solution. And each case has a few different possibilities there. There are also some environmental puzzles to solve with inventory, including a fuse box puzzle, because there is always a fuse box puzzle. There will never not be a fuse box puzzle.
There really are fuse box puzzles and everything.
This game could have been called Casebook 1099, The Medieval Peasant Murders, and you'd still have to dick around with a fucking fuse box. I do not understand the fascination that point-and-click designers have with fuse boxes. What is it? What is left to discover? Have we not exhausted every available frontier of a goddamn fuse box puzzle?
Aki, you love your mystery games. What are your thoughts on fuse boxes?
I love them. They're simple puzzles and they help stupid people. Like, that's the only way Jacob would ever finish one of these. If it was just filled with fuse boxes, he should maybe be able to figure that out.
By some miracle, the person who designed this game is listening, absolutely no way. The sequel obviously is just the fuse box murders. Like, that's fucking peanut butter and jelly right there. That is your next project.
Quick shout out to Vlad Slavin, who just subbed with us once again. The alert didn't go off, but I see it in chat. Then before we went live, Thimber subbed for the 17th month as well. Forgot to give them a shout out.
Vlad and Thimber, I'm so sorry you have to listen to this, but I digress.
They willingly come here. This is on them at this point.
Yeah, it's true. This is a buyer beware situation. But I digress. This game has a hint system, sort of, in that the detective is accompanied by public prosecutor Gustav Mobius, who has the coolest name in video games. That's a great name. Gustav Mobius is a fancy man who offers hints and reveals the clickable parts of each environment. A note, his hints are not useful, and he talks to your character like he's a fucking idiot. Gustav rules. he is a consistent high point in this game. What sets this game apart? Because there's like a lot of point and click mystery games like this, and quite a few released in the past couple years. What sets this game apart from others like it, at least for me, is that the tone is pretty straightforward. There's almost a dignity to this game that its peers don't have, because most point-and-click mystery games are some combination of horror and comedy. Which is not to say there's like no levity at all, but it feels more like a BBC mystery program and less like Sam and Max Hit the Road, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Where this becomes an issue is when the puzzles lack any clear direction or goal, and the in-game hint system fucks you over on hints. The dry tone makes the repetitive nature of point-and-click games more apparent. There's a lot of backtracking. You have to talk to a lot of the same characters over and over again because you find something or you've come up with a new question. There's just a lot of going back and forth. And some dialogue trees have to be hit in a certain order for the case to progress, which the game does not make terribly clear. But granted, it's a bit dry. I'm trying to very gracefully skate around the stereotype of Germans having no sense of humor. At least I was until I just said it out loud like a fucking idiot. But while the game might be a bit dry... If you'll excuse my nationalism and bigotry, while the game's a bit dry, I can appreciate the designer sense of humor, you know, lacking that he may have. He does not want to make yet another homage to LucasArts, and he wanted to try something else instead, which, you know what? I can applaud that kind of ambition. I also like the German voice acting with the English subs. That was cool. That was a fun playing experience for me. You rarely hear that much conversational German video games over here in America. So that was cool. But enough with the goddamn fuse boxes. Please, I beg of you. Every game they're in.
You really are.
Infuriating. Anyway, that's my review. Why I ended on the fuse boxes, I don't actually know. But
hey, you got to do what you got to do with these, right?
All right. It was fresh in my mind for whatever reason.
Well, Casebook $18.99 is not $18.99. It is $17.99. What are your thoughts on that?
That feels like a missed opportunity. There was a moment.
It's $1 cheaper, so you know.
I mean, that part's nice, but there was a real moment of synergy that they could have had. That they just for some reason didn't bite on. I'd wait till this is on sale for like 10. Yeah, 10 sounds about right.
That works.
But if you like point and clicks, and if you for some reason are getting a little tired of the like vaudeville era humor that most of those games employ, you might like this. This might be more up your alley.
Very good. All right, Dave, that is it for you. Were you going to head out, or are you going to stick around to listen to Aki suffer later in the show?
I'm probably going to head out, actually, because I'm going to unwind a bit before bed. But I will keep the show on. I'll find a way to stream it on Twitch so I can hear Aki die eating a bunch of hot sauce, I guess, is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's happening. It's going to be fun.
Why
does you don't sound like soup. You don't have to do this.
Yes, I do. I already said I was going to do it, so I have to do it.
I mean, all right, I can admire that, I suppose. It's admirable.
For whatever
reason. No, it's
reason,
stupid,
you know,
is what it is.
I was trying to be polite about it, but yeah, I already fucked that up. Calling out Germans for not being funny, so I might as well go full circle.
Might as well.
This is all about Schrodenfreude. Be happy at my pain. Everyone should just go ahead. Be happy. It's fine.
We will.
It's less satisfying Schadenfreude if you're openly telling us to do it.
Well, you know, don't care.
I mean, that's fine, but like, you need to approach the situation with a certain amount of like bombast and false confidence for it to be truly satisfying.
I think I had the bombastic confidence that I even bullied myself into doing this. So.
Well, fair, but like, put some bass in your voice. Goddamn, like, you know, square your shoulders up a little bit. Fucking stare this hot sauce down. You don't need to take any of that shit. You can do this. You can conquer this hot sauce.
You can do it, Aki. We believe in you.
Glad someone does, because it ain't me.
You sound stupid, you weird-looking bastard.
Which one of us is that referring to?
Me.
Jacob.
I'm pretty weird has looking faith in me. She's crazy. You're all crazy.
Well, Dave, always good having you on, chatting about stuff. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
I did want to ask, since you're a WWE watcher and I'm not, did they turn Jey Uso heel? Is that a thing that really happened?
I don't think so. I think they're what? Are you just
nothing
humming, Aki?
Yes, because when you went, all I could think is, I've got a feeling.
Hooked on a feeling. I don't think he necessarily turned heel in the beginning of the show. Him and LA Knight were like in a corner, and LA Knight moved, and Bronson splashed him. And Jay's like, you're a motherfucker. Why would you do this to me? How could you turn your back on me? And LA Knight's like, dude, I just moved. I didn't attack you in any way. And then at the end of the night, Jey attacked Knight. And people were like, oh, how could he do that? And I don't know. We'll find out Monday.
I didn't see the bit, but like, how did he not see Bronson coming?
Because Knight was in front of him.
That should not factor in. Bronson is like two of LA Knight. He's a wide man.
That is true.
Like, the shadow he would cast is usually enough. I don't know.
There's an excuse to watch Raw with me on Monday.
No, there isn't. Hold on. Let me leave on this. There we go.
Wait. I got one. I got a quick one. Where is it? Hey, Dave.
Get the fuck out of my ring.
Elton Dandy's still in there.
Yeah, good night, everybody.
Bitch, you heard me.
Next game to talk about: Metal Eden, developed by Raycon Games, published by Deep Silver, released September 2nd, Series X and S, PS5 and PC for $39.99. Dive into cybernetic warfare against the machine forces that protect the secrets of an artificial world, whatever that means. Fight a diverse range of Fight a unique range of tough, agile mecha troops and elemental forces. Extract energy cores and destroy the internal defense core shields to gain a battle zone advantage. Develop your arsenal and combat capabilities to become an unstoppable hyper unit. Aki, what is Metal Eden?
You're a fucking dick. Just so you know.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Anyways, so in this, you play as a military girl, and you're going around killing the shit out of lots of robots, because they're little bastards, and they want to kill you. Finita! So, yeah, you are brought back as a member of the society who all have basically uploaded their minds into a storage space, not even to the internet. Man, these people suck. So they're all basically stored in the storage space, and their mind is uploaded to little androids or something. And you are a security personnel, and basically this entire area, people were supposed to have robots build this place up, and then all the people would be given their bodies so they'd have the resources and stuff to survive, and something went fucky. All the corporations that backed this, what they really wanted was the resources on this place. They didn't really care about making it livable because, you know, multi-billion dollar corporations are the evil, in case anyone hasn't figured that out. That's just life. So you are now being brought out by what seems to be a corrupted AI to try and fix this place and make it livable so people can exist. The problem with this is basically all of the other people went corrupted and went mad and decided to start destroying stuff. So all the robots are batshit insane and trying to kill your ass. It's really fun. You get points for killing enemies, and you can later use these points to upgrade your weapons, which is fantastic. You get a bunch of weapons throughout the game. You start off with an infinite bullet rifle, which fires very slowly. And you can give it different abilities like recharging faster, doing more damage, better accuracy. You also end up getting a hold of every other weapon has limited ammo. You get a hold of a pistol, a shotgun, I think a rocket launcher or something. You get a bunch of different weapons as you go through the levels, and they don't fuck around. Enemies come at you half a dozen or so at once, and they are not slow. They run right up at you, or they're throwing bombs at you constantly. One or the other, it's going to ruin your fucking day one way or another, so have fun. And yeah, you're going through levels. Most of the levels take about 30 to 45 minutes apiece to play. They're not small, but they're not large either. They're all very streamlined, very linear, but they're big. There are some things you can find in the environments and stuff, usually some extra points and power-ups and stuff like that. You have your health, you have armor that you can pick up. I'm not really exactly sure what armor does, because even if you're hit when you're wearing armor, it still does damage to your health, which kind of sucks ass. I don't know if that's a bug that's in the game or if it's meant to do that, because there's an achievement for getting through like 10 different major fights without taking damage, and it's like, even with maxed armor, you take damage before that armor is depleted. So I'm like, This is hard to do. So I'm hoping that's a bug and that gets fixed, because I don't understand the purpose for armor at that point. And yeah, you're pretty quick yourself. You have a dash button. You can run on walls for a little bit. All your guns are zippity and can shoot the shit out of everything. It's pretty fun. If it weren't for Daemon Ex Machina, this probably would have been my favorite game so far, because this is a really fun game. When you die, you get to restart pretty close to where you left off. After you've finished a level, you can always go back into it, I assume, in order to get more points so you can level up your weapons some more. I assume it doesn't take anything away from you. I don't know. I haven't done it, because I have been just trying to power through it, because this is a very long game, and it is very difficult in some places. Because there's a bunch of different types of enemies. There's these little shitbags that run at you incessantly and jump and just stab you over and over and over. There's some big guys that are actually shaped like people that'll run at you and start punching you. Other ones that throw bombs and shoot at you, and they're evil. Because they'll throw bombs at you when you're not looking too, because they're little assholes. And then you got all sorts of like mini bosses that are like giant loaders from fucking Alien that are just robots that come running up at you, and they're super strong. They can jump far distances, and they'll wreck your shit. And sometimes, like in the last level I played, it spawned like 6 of them in a room with me. So, you know, that wasn't fucking fair. Granted, I did manage to kill them. Yeah, exactly. It hurt my feelings. So, yeah. Very fun game. I thoroughly enjoy it so far. Any questions?
Is it worth $40?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is pretty fun. I think you'll definitely get your hours out of this one.
Very good. Any other comments?
She has nice tits.
Shouldn't have asked. Next game, Dragon Ruins, developed by Grave Robber Foundation, published by Kemco. Released September 5th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Xbox, PC, Switch, and PS5 for $8.99. Brave the depths of an ancient ruin discovered in the capital of, I'm not saying that word, where no soul has ever returned and where a legendary dragon awaits. And this retro-style dungeon crawler RPG, become the hero who conquers the maze and slays the beast lurking in the shadows. Chris, tell us, what is Dragon Ruins and how the hell do you pronounce that name?
Izigwir?
I'll trust
you. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Fassily? Fassily, the capital of Izigwir?
Yes.
That's just what it looks like to me. I don't know. Well, all right. Well, this is a really, really interesting one. This is a wizardry style, and I mean really wizardry style, first person dungeon crawling RPG with a difference. The difference being that it's mostly automated. So what you do is you start your game and you pick from your usual CRPG, quote unquote, you know, your usual dungeon crawler archetypes. You know, you got a Kunoichi you can have, a Valkyrie, a general, which is like a big old knight with a skulls helmet thing, or just like a regular knight, you know, your wizards, your witches, you know, clerics and sages and whatnot, which is kind of nice. You don't have to roll a high roll for a sage or a ninja because, you know, that's famously in wizardry almost impossible to start with. But it's actually, you know, you put together your team. You don't name them. You don't equip them. You start off in the town where you have the choice of going to the blacksmith to upgrade your equipment. And that's just a straight up pay $50 or 50 gold to upgrade your equipment. The guild to pay money to if you have the experience points to raise your level. And then you know, you can look at the status of your characters, save. Because it has an auto save, but you can also just save your game. And then there's the option to go to the maze. And you go into the maze, and you'll recognize this if you played, you know, Wizardry on the old Apple computers. Is that it's a vector line dungeon, right? So it runs smoothly. You know, you like it's not just a frame by frame like what you'd see on like the Nintendo. Like you can actually see the frames, you know, kind of gradually moving forward, but pretty quickly. But then you start to notice something. Your characters don't have hit points. They have a life bar. They also have a blue bar for experience points. Anytime you go into a door, pretty much, you're going to get into a fight. And you'll notice you don't have any input. The fights just happen. What this is a dungeon crawling game where you don't actually participate in the fights. You could even just walk away from the fight if you really wanted to. But if you sit there, then your characters will duke it out. You know, it'll kind of tell you what's going on in the upper right corner's text box. And then you either just win or lose. And then you just move on. You got some experience. You got some gold. Do you go back and do you have a character that can gain a level? Do you want to, you know, buy them a level? Do you want to buy them some more? Or just purchase a equipment upgrade. You know, you can do that. You know, as soon as you go back to town, whether you're dead or dying or, you know, all your characters are injured, then you just automatically, as soon as you go back to town, you're all good. If all your characters die, it's a game over, quote unquote. It just takes you back to the town and says 85 days has elapsed or however many days. It only happened one time for me, and it was like, you were rescued after 85 days. And I was like, well, that sounds dramatic, but that's all that happened. I haven't run into any story yet. Apparently there's you know, some story here, but I mean, that's kind of common for wizardry too. You know, it just kind of tells you what you're experiencing. It's not like your characters have dialogue or anything like that. But yeah, it's just, it's basically going through the process of exploring this giant maze where, like I said, every door that opens, you know, or sometimes randomly, although enemies do tend to stay away from places you've already fought and cleared for a year. That is to say, you start off in the year 1000, and I noticed when it ticked over to the year 1001, all the enemies came back into all the places that they were before. Ooh. Which is fine, because that's a little bit of grinding, and like I said, if you're overpowering the enemy, then you just sit there for a second and your guys win. Or gals, in my case. I picked an all-female party, even though it literally doesn't matter. So yeah, this is it's kind of like wizardry, just with all of the you know, it's the exploration of a dungeon crawler, but without item management, without combat, like I said, without the kind of ceremony that, you know, comes with, you know, menuing and like kind of you know, setting up a loadout. There's not even the system of if your team dies in the dungeon, you have to send another team in after it. It's just explore the map, and you know, as you take damage and, you know, get a little bit further past where you're supposed to go, just go back to town. You can either, you know, a lot of the kind of situation that comes up is your characters gain levels pretty fast, especially at first, and they don't gain money quite as fast. So it's kind of like saving up your money so you can purchase, you know, your level upgrades. And then, you know, you may not have enough money left over to do your equipment upgrades. And so you just kind of keep going. But, you know, it just kind of just seems to go on, you know, like it's not like I got caught somewhere because I wasn't powerful enough or anything. It's just like I said, there's no stakes really to it. It's just kind of, yeah, the exploration part of a dungeon crawler, but without all of the math and doing things. It's just walk around in here and uncover parts of the map, and then, you know, fight enemies automatically, and then come back and rest up and get back out there and do it. Explore this giant maze. So really interesting approach to it, because, you know, usually, you know, there's a lot of dungeon crawlers that try to make it more easy and streamlined to do menu-based combat and stuff like that, but I've never seen anybody keep the first person vector graphic dungeon crawling like experience and remove all the rest. But that is what this game has purported to do. And the craziest thing about it is I love it. It's so addicting to play. It's almost like a whole different kind of experience, because, you know, you're essentially, you know, you're coloring in lines by moving around in a dungeon. There's no backgrounds, you know, it's black and white, so it's like there's nothing like extraordinary to look at. You know, there's cool little portraits of the enemies you're fighting. It really is just like watching bars and numbers go up and down, and, you know, filling in lines, and then just, you know, going back and saving it and stuff. But, you know, that it activates the animal part of my brain that's like into that. So what else?
Cool. Well, it's $9. What do you think of it?
Yeah. Well, don't come in expecting an RPG or anything. Don't expect a vibrant like dungeon crawling adventure or any kind of like story or lore. I'm sure that appears somewhere, but I mean, I've been at this for hours and I'm still on the first level. Just like in a wizardry game, except I have uncovered like just this gargantuan map. Like the map is so big. But yeah, it's like, you know, and you can always find your way back because it gives you coordinates. So 00 is your home base. And so you always know where you are in the grand scheme of things. So that's not even a bad thing. But yeah, don't expect an RPG, but do expect an interesting experience. And like I said, I got plenty hooked on this. I think it's absolutely a buy it. This is worth checking out and really does make me think about things as to how I'm, you know, how do I engage with like RPGs of this nature? And like, is this enough?
Very good. Hmm? All right, next up, Neon Apex Beyond the Limit, developed by Repixelate, published by Numbskull Games. This one came back out May 15th, Series X and S, Switch, PS5, PC, $24.99 on the shattered earth of 2124. Nothing is as it seems, but out on the track, the truth is laid bare. Welcome to the Neon Apex, only open to the most elite racers, both human and other. Prove that you can handle breakneck speeds and perilous race courses to win it all. Purnell, how'd you do in Neon Apex?
So, Neon Apex is a game which, if you've played any general racing game, you'll be familiar with a structure, but they do give you a lot of different moves with which to play within this structure. At the beginning of the game, I don't rephrase that because I'm thinking about story mode specifically. At the beginning of the game, you'll choose from a series of different modes. I'll save the one I actually focused on for last, but for the most part, there are multiple modes. There's career, story, championship, arcade, and time attack. And regardless of which mode you'll pick, in some way, shape, or form, you are going to engage in racing. The way racing works in this game is pretty specific. You choose a car, if the mode permits you to choose a car. Otherwise, you'll be driving a car or a bike. At the time of the race starting, the usually will put you in what is essentially one big city, but the city has different stretches of road which they can use to make up a track. So, for example, one race might be a loop that's in the center of this baseline city they've created. Other times, it might be all the way going across the city in a form of three laps, any number of things. But regardless of what they choose to do, you're going to start racing at the count of 3, 2, 1, go. The game is structured around acceleration, boosting, drifting. There's a brake button too, but if you're doing it right, you're not going to brake. I believe that this game also has speed ramps that you can hit or in the form of like arrows on the ground. You've probably seen these in games like the original, like, I don't know what games, I guess F-Zero would do it. But when done in this game, I will say that I'm grateful for that, that I think they get the speed aspect of it right. When you're racing in the game, even at the level one cup on bike or car, you do feel like you're going pretty fast. And the drift button absolutely comes in handy. And if you're like me, you're going to scuff up against the walls constantly. And when that happens, your car does have a damage gauge. If you take too much damage, your car will explode. Usually the game will put you back on the race, but you'll lose a good chunk of time in said race when your car blows up. When you choose to, the game early on activates nitro mode, and you can use that to get a quick boost on the track. If you, say, for example, miss a speed boost arrow or whatever, you can get that extra bit of a kick. Nitro drains as you do this, but you can refill your nitro by crashing into cars, or rather oncoming traffic. Not your other racers, but oncoming traffic as you're driving on the course, because by doing so, they'll blow up and you magically get nitro, which is good because if you're playing this game right, you should be using nitro damn near all the time. So, and at the end of a race, you will succeed and get whatever bonuses that mode offers you. Story mode racing comes in the form of you choosing a character and going through a series of races to undergo their narrative. From what I could tell from the progress gauge, there is one character for 12 races. I didn't stick with this mode too long because it didn't really grab me so much. For whatever reason, the character models in this game didn't really make me feel invested in engaging with them. So story mode didn't really click for me at all. So I dabbled with it to see what it was like and moved on. Championship mode is what you're used to seeing in something like, say, Mario Kart, where you can choose a cup or F-Zero, because I guess technically this game is more emulating F-Zero than that. So let's stick with that. Similar to F-Zero, where you'll choose a cup in that game as well. The game in this case gives you 8 courses to race. You knock out all 8 of those courses, and based on how you rank by the end of all 8 determines how you rate in the championship and if you succeeded in one against it or not. Arcade, I'll be blunt, I didn't even dabble with it because that's generally like choose a track and race it. But the mode I did play the majority of my time with, which I think is actually pretty nifty, is the career mode. In career mode, you choose a character, and that ends up being who you are portraying throughout the races. And then from that point on, you will get a series of events you can engage in. Each event you can engage in comes at a level, being the difficulty of, or the cup rather, of the cup. So, for example, level 2 might be level 2 speed class. level. The level is the difficulty, but then there's the speed class, and that is how fast the cars are meant to go, like top speed of a certain type of car. That could also be done for bike races as well. So it might be a level one race that is a speed class two bike race. And if you choose, for example, a race, you'll be racing against seven other people. Best player wins after three laps. There might be a versus race you can do where you'll be placing one-on-one against one other person on the track. If you beat them, you know, you win. Sometimes there's a race where the whole goal is to chase the person down and destroy their car. Again, if you manage to pull that off and you do a well enough job, you'll get prize money for that. And for the most part, that is the general vibe of like the race mode options you get here, though they come in the form of bikes, races, and car races. When you decide to choose a race, you'll get the ability to take a car, if it's a car race, or a bike, if it's a bike race. You can go to the garage to purchase cards, which basically work as upgrades to the car. You can equip them to the car or bike to increase their handling or the amount of, you know, speed, the max speed they can do, or their ability to grip the track, and so on and so forth, and then take the car to the race and hope for the best. Every race requires you to spend prize money to get into the race, and then prize money you can win if you pull it off. I don't know what happens if you run out of money, because I'm not stupid enough to let that happen. So I can't tell you what happens if you run out of money. The game, in my opinion, makes it pretty easy, as long as you're good at balancing your checkbook, to never run out of money. So I never experienced that. But I did enjoy this mode the most, because the weird thing about this game is that, I hate saying it this way because it seems harsh, but it's the truth. The character models didn't do anything for me. The looks of the cars and bikes didn't do anything for me. And the racetracks themselves visually didn't do anything for me. But when I actually drove the car or drove the bike, I absolutely enjoyed that. And that is the meat and potatoes of a racing game anyway, is the racing element. And I feel as though they did a good job with that. I enjoyed the speed element that they provided for the game. I enjoyed running down the opponents and smashing their cars up. I enjoyed trying to come in first place in any element of the race modes I did. So that puts me in a weird spot with the game. And it comes like, what do you think of the game? Because the core is what I liked. I liked racing the races in all the modes on career mode that I did, which again, at their core, is elements that exist in the other modes to play, which means that means I would also like the other modes. I just didn't care about stories. I didn't care about the characters and stuff. So with that said, I do feel as though if you're interested in a racing game that hits the F-Zero oomph in regards to speed and the like, and you haven't come across one in a while, I do feel as though this can measure up and hit that note for you. If you were looking for some kind of in-depth narrative where you feel like you want to get invested in the different characters and such, I can't make any promises there. As a personal take, you might come away feeling differently than I did. But I think the whole selling point of this game is the fact that the racing is done well and they get the speed right. And the bikes and the cars do handle a bit differently from each other.
All right. What is your verdict? $25.
I would give it a try it in that regard. You're like, what? I'm like, yeah. You know how I do it. I did it all before the, what do you think? I'm like, you're the G.
All right, moving on. The Mystery of Woolly Mountain, developed and published by Lightfoot Bros Games, released August 29th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $11.49. The Mystery of Woolly Mountain is an otherworldly adventure game filled with strange beasts, evil witches, confused automatons, and wacky rope men. Join a renegade crew of time-traveling audio scientists on a hilarious and fantastical quest. A malevolent witch has captured a group of children, and it's up to you to save them from the mysterious island of Woolly Mountain. Oracolite, tell us about this one.
Alrighty, so we have Van Damme, Loud and Clear, embarks on a mission to Woolly Mountain to save some missing children from an evil witch. He finds his hole leading into the witch's secret lair, turns out to be a poisonous trap, which incapacitates Van Damme, and who's collected by these demonic-looking henchmen with, like, dark skin and purple bulges covering their body. We learn that Van Damme is part of this group of time-traveling scientists called the Helmholtz Resonators, and the Evil Witch wants to get her hands on their time manipulation device, which is why she has lured Van Damme to her secret lair. Flash forward to Oompa Island. We find a note to Van Damme from someone named Tilda, who mentions the witch having kidnapped the children, and Tilda asks Van Damme to come and meet her at Moonlight Tavern for more info about the witch. And now we gain control of our primary protagonist for the game. His name is Garland Vanderbilt, another member of the Helmholtz Resonators. He's an older gentleman sporting a suit and top hat. And he says he must gather the rest of his crew aboard their submarine base in order to set out and save Van Damme. And essentially the start of the game, his main mission is just going around to collect his comrades, who are Carlton Breezy, Frizzles, I think this one might have got typoed in my notes, Stockstone, Otto, the robotic companion, and Cladney Plate.
Interesting.
Yeah, they have quite the names. Very distinguished. This game plays like a traditional point-and-click adventure game, especially some of the more retro-style ones. You have a cursor on the screen that kind of moves your character, allows you to interact with objects in the environment, in your inventory. You do have the option in this one, though, to click a button that reveals prompts and highlights all the items in the environment that you can interact with. So it's not going to be like one of those really old school ones where you're like pixel hunting the entire time, trying to figure out what you need to click on to trigger an interaction. And I think there was maybe like one item in the whole game that even with the highlight was like a little hard to see, but that was like inability to perceive it more so than it's the fault. But anyway, you're not going to spend hours pixel hunting on this one. So when you click on spots of the screen for your character to move to, he moves pretty quick. Unlike a lot of the older games too, they're not moving at a sauntering pace, slowly moving towards the next point of interest. He'll move pretty quick, especially in some areas he like hauls ass. And once you get an item there, you'll stock up in your inventory. There's never like too many in your inventory at one time, but you'll build up a nice collection if you're just like exploring the map right away without trying to figure out a lot of the puzzles first. And once you click on an item in your inventory bag, you also get a brief description of it in case you're not exactly sure what it is. And you can also drag and drop items into the environment to trigger interactions or combine them in your inventory. A number of the items need to solve key interactions have hints in the environment. Like, for example, there's a video that talks about a gun being useful against birds or squirrels, and then you'll find this giant seagull you need to get past, and it's like, oh, what do I do here? Now, our character says this soiled pipe that's been covered in sea grime could ruin a man's moonshine, and then you'll need to distract one of your comrades by putting the soiled pipe into his drink, so he doesn't want to drink anymore. there's some very quirky interactions like that. After you finish a key objective, you'll get some music that plays, and Garland will do this little victory dance where he sways his leg back and forth from side to side. It's a little cheesy, but kind of funny. There's a few less intuitive combinations in the game. The game is pretty short overall, depending on whether you get stuck for a while trying to figure out some of these specific item interactions. I would say between the hints you get for a number of them and the types of items you're acquiring, like over half of them are definitely pretty intuitive, I would say. Then there's maybe like 10% of them that not so much. Like there was one in particular that I got stuck on for probably like an hour. I just like couldn't figure out where I needed to combine this item. And by the time I figured it out, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't see that sooner. And it made me a little mad, but... But yeah, for the most part, not too bad, trying to figure out most interactions. The game has a very cartoony, cute art style, and a lot of your enjoyment in this game is going to really depend upon whether you like its particular brand of wholesome humor and mildly quirky characters. I say mildly because I feel like, other than maybe the main character Garland's, like, all the other main characters, at least from your like Helmholtz group, they have kind of like... very not tropey they're pretty focused characteristics. And then all the side characters are kind of like whatever. Like, I didn't really think many of them are very interesting other than maybe one or two of them. But that is could be because like
did we lose him? Are you there?
My controller died. Oh no. No.
Is it all going where did I leave off at?
Sorry, where did I leave off at?
Oh, I don't even remember. Whatever you were saying, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, so a lot of the enjoyment of this game is going to be dependent upon whether you resonate with its particular brand of humor and the characters they have presented. And without spoiling too much, my favorite part from a comedic standpoint is that you spend all this time collecting your team and convincing them to go on this journey to save your teammate. And then you get to the second area of the game, and everyone just kind of splits up and focuses on their own selfish tasks. And Garland's like, come on, guys, we really need to go save Van Damme, but, you know, they want to do their own menial things, so this guy's in danger. So, yeah, that's pretty much my general feel.
Oh, you are breaking up like crazy. You there?
Breaking up is hard to do.
Oh, goddamn. Sorry, Joe. Yeah, this battery pack is like dead. I need to buy a new one.
All right, let's get to this then. 11:49, give us a verdict.
Unless you're... I'd give it a try it for the most part. Like, if you're a fan of really old-school point-and-click adventure games, and you think this the humor in this one is going to strike your fancy... it's probably worth checking out, but honestly for me, like, it didn't really resonate with me, per se, but it, you know, it has all the general staples for, you know, traditional point and click games. Nothing that really stood out for me. I did also run into one glitch near the end of the game. I don't know if this is on the other, console versions, but on Xbox, there's like one kind of final interactive sequence you go through, and after I did it, the screen just went like pitch black, and that happened multiple times, and the only way I was able to bypass that was by trying to like break the game essentially. I was like spamming button spamming buttons on my controller, and eventually I was able to make it so it recovered the previous screen, and I was able to finish the last cutscene for the game, but that was kind of annoying. I don't know if you're going to be able to, or if they're planning on patching that soon. But, yeah, I didn't run into any tech issues in the game other than that one particular buggy one. Yeah, I would give it a try. It's nothing to write home about, in my opinion, but if you like those old school ones, it might be worth checking out.
Cool. Sounds good. Next up, Aki, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
You ready for this?
Yeah, I guess.
Rah, rah, rah.
Do you want me to to read the intro, or do you want to eat during the intro?
I have another review after this. What are you talking about?
I know you do.
You're mean.
Yeah, that's what I said. If you can't do the second one, we could bump it. That's a sacrificial lamb on this episode.
Okay, let me go make my taco while you pose for some stuff. Whatever. Words.
All right, next game, The Order of the Snake Scale, developed by FM Simple Game Studio, published by Ultimate Games, who have also hooked us up with a couple of spare copies to give away in chat. So if you are in chat, make sure to hit exclamation enter and get your entries in for a shot to win this, courtesy of Ultimate Games. Released September 5th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $12.99. Will come out September 25th for Switch, PS4, and PS5. Inspired by Lovecraft, the psychological survival horror game set in a dystopian alternate universe. Discover the mystery of the woman's death and learn the dark secrets of the Happy Rock. Are you ready? Aki, I think that question has multiple meanings right now. So, are you ready?
Are you ready?
He's still making tacos, isn't she?
Put that sauce in the mouth. Are you ready?
She's taking her sweet ass time making these tacos.
Yeah. Because you don't want to eat that sauce.
Ernell, tell us about your time with this game.
Well, I know it existed. And I was like, wow, that game is interesting. So I said to myself, you should look into buying it. So I went to the store, pulled up the page. And I read the details related to the game and then thought, I got no damn money for this. I can't buy it right now. But I can contemplate the potential purchase of buying it later when I have some money.
So I you know what else you can do? You can jump in our Twitch chat right now. Exclamation enter for your shot at a copy of this game, courtesy Ultimate Games. We'll pick a winner after the show and then after the music. So, yeah, Aki, you here yet?
Just assume I did it. How'd she not make these tacos before during all the other reviews before her turn?
Seriously, she knew what the plan was. I think I'm going to keep all this in.
Maybe. I wish I could think of something more entertaining for that segment, though. I want people to not feel like they're wasting their time hearing me go, whatever. Aki, slow. Eat the tacos, Aki.
I'm saying tacos.
Honestly, I could go for some tacos right now. I still got my leftover pizza from tonight, but I would rather have a taco in all due honesty right about now. But, you playing anything right now while we're waiting for her?
No, I'm never playing stuff during the show.
I mean, like in general.
No. I played an hour of Scarlet Salvation, and that is as much as my arm could handle.
Oh, your arm's still acting up?
It's getting worse.
Jesus.
Yeah, it is now effectively getting worse. It is hurting more than it did previously. And, yeah. And then to make it better, I was in the bathroom last night washing my hands. I saw a fly buzzing around the room. You know how you see a fly and you just instinctively swat at it?
Instinctively swat it. Yep.
Guess which arm I used.
The one you
the bad one.
Oh, look who's back.
God, I'm scared. I put a half a teaspoon on here. It's enough to cover two bites.
Should I reread the intro?
Put some more on there.
I'm not. No. Fuck you. And yes, go ahead and read it. God, I'm scared.
Fuck you.
I'm literally shaking right now. I am legitimately scared of this.
All right. Take two. The Order of the Snake Scale, developed by FM Simple Game Studio, published by Ultimate Games, who hooked us up with copies of the game to give away. We talked about that earlier. I don't know if I'm keeping that or not. Released September 5th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $12.99. Coming out the 25th on Switch, PS4, and PS5. Inspired by Lovecraft, the psychological horror survival game set in a dystopian alternate universe. Discover the mystery of the woman's death and learn the dark secrets of the Happy Rock. Are you ready, Aki? More than one way. Are you ready?
Yeah. Oh my god, that's hot. Yeah.
But you already took the bite?
Yeah, I just took it right as you're finishing.
How's it going?
Oh man, my lips burn, and there was a bunch of stuff in between my lips and it. Oh fuck.
Well, at least we can't see the snot.
What is the Order of the Snake Scale?
Oh, and there goes both bites. Okay. So, and
perfect. I'm entertained.
Fucking hell. In this, you play as a cyborg cop thing, and you're brought in because there was a murder here. Oh, I fucking hate my life. Why did I do this? Oh, my eyes are watering. So, and
listens to me.
The water's the Scoble.
The Scoble is over 2 million. You're here to solve this crime. The game does not hold your hand at all. It expects you to figure things out, and you actually have to pay attention to what's going on in order to figure out when doors are open and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to get stuck in this game And you'll probably just restart it, thinking that you were stuck or glitched or something, and
Are you okay? You're not,
you just haven't paid enough. No, it hurts. I feel like I have drank so much right now. The world feels like it's spinning. This is only literally like 50 times around, almost 60 times stronger than what I usually eat. I got stuck in this and I restarted it, and I did that a couple times, and one of the major drawbacks of this game is there is no auto-saving. It's only manual. Yeah, so if you die, like I did after spending a few hours continuing the story, you lose all the progress, and it's like, well, after I did that and lost like 3.5 hours worth of progress because I wasn't thinking about it very, very well, we'll go with that. I kind of was like, no, I'm fucking done. This is not respecting my time at all.
Is it a manual save, or is it like you got to go to a typewriter or something?
You got to go to a typewriter. It's not a save anywhere program. It's a big stone piece of shit that you have to walk up to, and sometimes there's pretty big fucking distances between the little bastards. And there's also a bunch of enemies, and you have very limited ammo, so if you guys like that kind of stuff, good on you. The enemies are like zombie-styled like thingamabobs, and they take like 3 or 4 bullets to put down out of your very limited amount of ammo. It's like when you start the game, you have like 13 bullets. So yeah, I don't have sadly a lot to say. You're going to be reading a fuck ton in this because there are a lot of notes, and they do provide a chunk of story to them, so you kind of need to read them. And
is it directional movement or tank controls?
It is. It can be kind of both. If you're moving around normally, it is tank controls, where you have to move your character around with one thumbstick to get them to turn, and then move forward and backwards with the other thumbstick, which is fucking annoying, so I was like, nope, not doing that. Or you can pull out your gun, which brings up which turns the screen basically split screen and gives you like a targeting reticule like your T-800. And with that, you can basically move in first person mode, kind of. So you don't have to try and faff about as much with the tank controls, trying to orientate yourself as difficultly as otherwise. Oh, it's finally starting to go away. Oh, thank God. It still burns, but...
You want to take another bite?
No, I ate both bites.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, no, I ate both bites and then went... and then started this. That's why I didn't start right away when you told me to. Nice. So I was chewing up that last bite, and feel like I'm going to be on the toilet soon. Yeah, so you get to move around with that, and I think that's a much easier way of moving around personally, because then you can actually aim exactly where you need to go, whereas with the tank controls, there's a static camera. The camera will move around with you, but it's in one static location, so you're not able to orientate yourself properly. At least I couldn't, unless I was using the gun to actually orientate myself, and you can walk with it, so I just decided, fuck it, I'll walk with it up the entire time. Sadly, you can't run with it up, but, you know, hey, I don't mind taking forever if I can move the way I fucking want to, finally.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about price on this bad boy. The order of the Scoville scale clocks in at $12.99. It is on sale for the next week or so for $10.39. Thanks to Horak Light for that joke that no one caught. Aki, what do you think of this one for 13 bucks?
You know, that's... If you like these older style games, I think this is definitely for you, and it's probably going to pique your interest, but for everyone else, I don't think you're going to enjoy this game. So I think it's worth it for the people who want this game, and no one else needs to apply, because it's just going to fucking irritate you.
What would irritate more, the game or the hot sauce?
I'd rather play through this game a dozen times. Everything hurts.
Sweet. All right, next game to talk about is Katana, or Katana, I don't know, developed by Voidmaw, published by Voidmaw, and Acclaim? Wow. Released September 10th on Steam for $17.99. Katana is a fast-paced action roguelite blending fluid combat and cosmic horror, slash dodge and wield powerful abilities as you battle through a station sprawling with twisted, once-human horrors. Adapt, survive, and descend into the shadows to uncover its darkest secrets. Our friend Andy Sperry covered this one, sent us an audio recording, and here it is.
Katana scratches that itch for the roguelike player in your life who may or may not have read all the works of H.P. Lovecraft and rewatches John Carpenter's The Thing on repeat. It blends cosmic horror and dark fantasy to deliver a fast-paced, action-packed ride through hordes of enemies aboard a massive space station. If you're familiar with the world of roguelikes, I'd compare this to Motion Twin's Dead Cells. Both the pixelated graphics and the playstyle make that comparison, and I'd say there's some serious inspiration there as I watch some side-by-sides. But Katana feels fluid in its own way, and its fast-paced combat provides just the right push and difficulty. Plus, if you like blood, well, there's plenty of it. In Katana, you take control of a character known as Knot, something of a space samurai, wielding a powerful sword along with a variety of guns, bonus attacks, both active and passive, and plenty of stat upgrades that become available throughout a run. You'll also have a dodge roll and a refillable health syringe, because we don't want you dying out there. Well, actually, it really doesn't matter, since the powers that be can just bring you back to life. Each run is built with a different layout, but generally, you're carving your way through enemies to get from point A to point B. Along the way, you'll collect the aforementioned upgrades, as well as currency, which can be used between levels via a safe room, to purchase new weapons, boost stats, or even pick up a robot companion who hates once-human cosmic horrors just as much as you do. Katana follows a simple two rooms, then boss encounter setup, with enemies becoming increasingly difficult as you descend further into its nightmarish depths. Defeating a boss rewards you with even more upgrades and lets you push deeper into the space station. New characters can be found to help along your journey, and some even take up residence back at the main hub to offer new upgrades and unlockable items which become active to discover in the wild. Katana follows the classic roguelike loop, fight, die, upgrade, repeat. There's really nothing wrong with that, but after countless hours of roguelikes, nothing here really jumped out at me as an I gotta have this now kind of game. It's entertaining, it's got a cool theme and atmosphere, even the art style was well done, but overall I felt it landed somewhere in the mid-tier for me. The one thing I did find to be unique, I had to throw that in here, to Katana was an occasional encounter with an unseen force that would follow you until your character drank from a blood fountain. I didn't understand why, but when I found myself in this situation, I was totally there for it. But, again, as always, I'm not you. Check it out, make your own decision, and keep listening to the SML podcast.
All right, next up, Psycho Dream, developed by Edia, published by Rattleika Games, released September 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $5.99. A dangerous trend has emerged among young people. They are evading reality by taking permanent refuge in a new entertainment medium known as D-movies, which allow people to immerse themselves in a world of virtual reality and become part of a movie. Some of them remain in that alternate reality for so long, their bodies ultimately give up and die. These people are known as sinkers. Chris, what is Psychodream?
That's a weird place to end that, but okay. All right, so yeah, Psychodream. So this is an interesting Super Nintendo, well, Super Famicom, like kind of action platformer with a really surreal kind of premise and look to it, and even sound, really. That I'd say that certain things around it are a little bit more interesting than the game itself, but yeah, this game, you know, was made by Riot, who, you know, they made like the Valis games, so you'd probably know from them. And then of course, well, Riot, I mean, was basically Telenet, right? So, so it's like kind of, I don't know why they. I guess it was just like a certain team that worked for Telenet, which was like a larger team. So it's hard to say exactly which ones they made and stuff. But like, all in all, Telenet made things like, you know, they specialized in these kind of weird platformers, like, and shooters and things, everything from like, you know, El Viento and Ernest Evans and Exile, and they even worked on Ease 3, at least the port of it for the Genesis, and like I said, you know, the Valis games and Cosmic Fantasy actually also, which is a favorite of mine. Anyways, so Psychodream came out on the SNES, you know, and They had a planned English version that was going to come out in the U.S., but for some reason it got canceled until 2021, or I think 2021 is about when it showed up on the Super Nintendo NSO app in its original Japanese. So this Radaleika release, this separate Radaleika release, is a translated version of that same game. So basically, before I talk about the Radaleika version, I'll just talk about the game kind of in general. So yeah, it's about, you know, the story is exactly as you say. It's you know, about this kind of alternate reality television medium or whatever, D movies, where a girl gets stuck in one, and you play one of two characters that are called debuggers, who basically have to go into the program and interact with the program, which is of course the gameplay like setting, to get the girl out. And so you can either play as let's see, is Rio or Maria. So Rio is kind of he's a sword dude who looks like kind of like a red mage in Final Fantasy, right? He's got like a big red coat and a hat and stuff like that. And he's just got like this, you know, fencing sword and stuff. Maria is way cooler because she's like kind of dressed in like battle leather. And as she powers up, she grows butterfly wings and has like a homing laser. So I don't know how most of the game goes with Rio. I play as Maria. But yeah, so you kind of run and jump, and if you hold the R button, the shoulder button, then you can like run faster and jump higher. And you also, on top of having a regular attack that evolves as you pick up what's called protein for some reason, your character gets stronger and your shot changes, you know, or your weapon changes and things like that. And you also collect these screen clearing attacks that you can use. The actual action of it is like basically just that. There's not a whole lot else going on. It's really just going through fighting like waves of enemies and then these big room sized bosses, some of which are really cool. A lot of them are pretty creepy. Very, very cool stuff to see, though. They really, you know, it kind of like, you know, El Viento or Ernest Evans, in the sense that, you know, they really went all out on just being like weird with it, which is what I always love about Telenet.
You know, so, what I love?
What do you love?
I love when BX Latino Heat drops a sub. 30th month. Thank you, Latino Heat. Always good having you here. Appreciate the emotes.
Thank you.
Enjoy the emotes and the kitty cats and the bonus contest entries.
Yeah. Yay. Anyways, you get through the stages, and then, you know, like I said, if you win the day or whatever, then great. Like I said, it's cool, like waves of enemies and then like a giant boss and stuff like that. Not a whole lot to it. So the two things, the interesting like kind of dynamic here is that it's available on the NSO by itself, and then it's also available a la carte from Rataleika. So let's explore the differences there. Oh, I did want to say something else interesting about the game itself, though, is that the director of it is Kenichi Nishi. He also directed Chibi Robo, and he also did some design for like Love Delic. So he worked on Moon Remix RPG, which I love, and also LOL Lack of Love. He did the writing for that. So that's kind of cool. I really, really enjoy his work. He designed the Pixel Game Master series Puzzle Pedestrians, which we covered on this show before. I like Kenichi Nishi. Anyway, just wanted to shout out Kenichi Nishi for this. He also worked on Super Mario RPG and Chrono Trigger in the field planning role. So I don't know what that means, so I'm not going to talk about that anymore. The NSO version, like I said, has been on Switch for years. It is the game, and of course you get all of the usual like suspend points, and you can of course alter the controls using the menu, and things like that. The rewind feature, of course, like any SNES thing. And the thing about Psycho Dream is that the intro is in Japanese, but the gameplay is more or less in English already, because there's not inter-game text. Like, there's nothing between levels. There's no, like, story moments or anything like that. Even the ending is textless. So it's really just kind of the intro. And so in being a translated version, like, nobody's even bothered to fan translate this game as far as I know. I can't find it anyway. Maybe it has. I never know for sure. But this game did take the extra step in that it did translate the intro. The intro is more or less just kind of a flavor thing. It's just a copyright notice for the D movie that you're about to play or watch, you know, kind of like a parody of like VHS tapes, right? And that's kind of it. That's kind of all they'd really translated. Everything else is already, you know, already there. So, you also do in this version get the load state and save states. Scale modes, which a little bit of this confused me, but yeah, you can set it to retain aspect ratio or fill entire screen, of course, which you don't want to do, because if you have a widescreen TV, which you almost certainly do, you do not want to play this in 16:9. That's ludicrous behavior. You can set it to pixel perfect, and then with pixel perfect, you have four levels of zoom. If you keep it at zoom 1, then you're playing on a postage stamp, and if you put it on zoom 4, then it's basically the same size as retain integer factor and retain aspect ratio. I don't know what those two things mean. I couldn't tell them apart when I set each one of them, so you'll just have to know what that is. You can also set the scale filter to nearest neighbor or bilinear, which, if you're used to emulators, you kind of know what those mean. I'm not going to explain it all here. It also has a lot of shader effects, curvature, black and white, sepia, CRT, LCD. You got about 6 or 7 of those. You can set a frame skip. Why would you do that? I don't know. You can't set the controls, which is interesting enough at all, and I'll come back to that because it's important, but it does give you the option of setting a rewind button and a turbo button, so you now have like a straight up just rewind right there. You don't have to hold the two buttons for like a second and like skip back a frame. You can put it in turbo mode, which the NSO can't do. You also have quick save and quick load, but hotkeys you can set. the pause combination, then helper mode, which is interesting because that basically means that any controller that's connected can control player one. So if you are, for some reason, if you got somebody backseating you on this one and they've got a controller, they can just do the thing for you, which is what they wanted to do the whole time. You can set turbo speed, rewind speed, disable the sprite limit, which is actually pretty important on this one, because in some of the heavier sections, this makes a lot, this does a lot of sprite flicker, this game, in its original format. So you can turn off that sprite limit. So it, you know, makes it look a little bit better for you, but of course it takes away from the authenticity of it all. You've also got cheats. you've also got cheats that you can go through, which is probably the most important thing here, as far as like differences between the NSO. Like most Rattalaika games like this, you got the infinite health, infinite lives, infinite magic, and level select enabled, so that you can choose whatever level and break it however you want. And then it does have extras. It has the jukebox with the soundtrack, a gallery of four pictures. I don't know if more unlock as you play the game, but I don't think so. That's not usually how they go. So it has four pictures in the gallery. it has a scan of the manual, which is in Japanese and has not been translated. So you can look at the manual if you want, but if you do not read Japanese, you cannot read it. It also has some chivos. They're black and white pictures, and they light up into color if you have unlocked them. It's for things as simple as reaching a certain score or getting certain power-ups, and then, of course, goes up to finishing the game. There's no, like, there's not any real crazy chivos on this. It's just beat the game. You've probably gotten them all.
Yeah.
Then you play the game. And so a lot of it is like stuff you don't really need unless you really need those emulation options. And like I said, it's for about a paragraph of translated flavor text. Now, how does the gameplay itself? It is pretty much identical. Everything looks like it's fine here. I definitely had to set it on Zoom 4 and then Zoom on my TV to get a full 4x3 picture, but the same is true for NSO. For some reason, this game is crushed into like this kind of different aspect ratio where it's like the tops and bottoms are cut off, but it's still a 4:3 picture. So no matter how you play this game, it's always going to be with a lot of black around it. So even zoomed in all the way, unless I did fill screen, which of course would put it as a 16:9, which is not its actual aspect ratio. So
yeah.
It's hard to get a full screen picture out of this. The other thing that I noticed is that it has some control issues. So I had this thing happen where I got a couple levels in. And I actually have even a save state there where it kind of messed with my controls, where now the B button does the magic attack, and then the A button pauses it and hits the jump input at the same time, but start also works that way. And it just kind of works intermittently. Like, sometimes if I load that state, it does it. Sometimes it doesn't. But this is not something I can really fix because you have no control over what the buttons do. So there's a couple of kind of bugs like that. Controller bugs in there. It wasn't anything that was, like, really breaking for me. I did notice that, like, yeah, when I started a new game, it was fixed. So, yeah, maybe not a big deal, but it at least was something that I noted and, you know, paid attention to there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's basically what it is. It's translated to English. It's got a few more options, but apart from that, it is the same game that you can already play if you have the NSO.
Well, $6. What do you think?
It's really hard for me not to recommend something that's been translated, because I support like any official or, you know, official by way of like, you know, another publisher translations. It's really kind of not enough there to warrant paying for it again, especially when, like, you know, like I said, you don't get anything like a special zoom mode that makes it like a straight up 4x3 or like fills up your screen better. You know, there's like, it feels like there's some more stuff they could have done here, and they just kind of went with the usual set of like things that they the usual set of things, you know. Oh, you could also, by the way, toggle the Japanese version here if you want to. So that's, it's not strictly the American version, but that is available here. I would say $6 is kind of a fuck it, why not, especially if you're not on the NSO and you just want to play this game, because it's a really, really cool game to play. It's certainly worth it. It's just the presence of it on a app that already exists. And like I said, with translation done on a part that doesn't even tell you the story of the game, like, you can't find the story of the game in the game. At least I couldn't. That kind of puts it into a little bit of
this isn't just a Switch release. It's also on Xbox, PlayStation, PC. So for those gamers, they don't really have another option to play this one.
Yeah, for those gamers, I would say just, you know, watch out for if you're using the save states and you load a state and it's got weird controls now, you know, because that's what happened to me. Yeah, if you don't have another way to play this, then certainly it's worth a buy. It's a great little Super Nintendo game and kind of a lost gem due to over here, due to it's not being released over here initially. But for the Switch version, which is the version that I'm reviewing, I would say that that does throw a wrench into it, and it's kind of a, it's a buy it, but conditional. So that's what I have to basically put it as.
All right. We got one last game to talk about tonight. And Aki, you're doing it again, aren't you?
Well, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm mentally handicapped. So, yeah, I'm doing it again.
Because you brought Brie in.
That's the
just old for this.
I rated a little too late. I'm sorry. I missed the first one. I'll have to go back and listen to the episode. I'm really excited.
Brie, did you end your stream early just to come in for this?
Maybe.
Or were you just like already done for the night?
Fuck my life.
It was a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B.
I see Jacob in chat. Jacob, you should jump in here too at this point.
No, he shouldn't. I don't hear his laughter. That's just going to make me angry legitimately.
Oh, God. All
right. So are you going to bite while I read?
Yeah, I'm going to eat both bites while you're doing the description.
All right.
Fuck my
one life. Last game to talk about tonight, and that is Snack and Quack, developed and published by Aphil Games. Released September 9th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Xbox PC, PS4, and PS5, $5 each. Snack and Quack is a 2D pixel art puzzle game designed for casual players. The goal is to guide all the ducklings to eat the scattered bread in each level. The game focuses on logical challenges and progressive difficulty across two distinct maps to keep players engaged. Bread. I bet bread would be really good to help with hot sauce. Aki, do you know anything about that?
Nope. Not at all. Oh, I shouldn't have drank water. Oh, that burns so much worse.
Aki, what is Snack and Quack?
Oh, that was a bad idea.
Yep. Yeah, it was. Oh,
fuck.
Go to the water. Drip, drip.
Oh, that hurts so bad. This is... This is Sokoban. Pretty sure that they slide to the... You push something in a direction, it slides all the way there. That's Sokoban, right? Joe?
Kind, yeah. Brie, do you have any thoughts?
Okay.
I haven't played this game.
Oh, you haven't?
I would say, yeah. If it's a block-pushing puzzle, it's Sokoban.
Goldeneye suggesting yogurt. How about Yogoban?
I don't have any yogurt. I hate my life. Oh, I have nothing to cool this off because I'm a moron.
Milk. Do you have any milk?
No, actually, I don't. I have water and soda, and both those things make it significantly worse, just reminded myself after drinking water. So
the player controls the mother duck, who can move on a grid-based system,
and then she quacked
and push the ducklings through the environment until they hit an object or a tile. So you got to get the duckies to where they got to go by pushing them around, right? Yeah.
Yep, and where they got to go is bread, which is why there's the quack and snack part, is because you push the little duckies into the bread and they stick their head through the middle, and it's really cute. Oh, this burns like a motherfucker. It's not a particularly hard game. It's, you know, it's Sokoban. It's, you've heard it once, you've heard it a billion fucking times at this point, you know, you slide things and you don't fuck up. It's, you know.
Well, for the people who haven't heard it a million times, oh, explain it, Joe. For us, Aki.
I hate you, Joe. I hate you so much. Every breath hurts.
How many levels are in this?
Every breath you take.
I think 30. I knew it was a big
you
number
die,
that I didn't
you?
Care about.
You just,
yes, I do right now. It, breathing hurts. My lips feel like someone punched me in my face.
Bree, does this make you happy?
I mean, I hate to see someone in pain unnecessarily. I wish that Aki had, you know, heeded my warnings about some good things to have on hand.
I meant to.
What, you warned her about having side product and she didn't listen to that either?
No,
she told me to have cowtails and coffee because that helps neutralize it. And I forgot about both.
Bree, honest question. Do you really believe this is unnecessary?
I mean...
Oh, fuck you, Joe.
I mean, she volunteered to do this, so...
Yeah. Twice. Yeah. In one episode.
Yeah.
In one episode. I appreciate it. I have questions, but I'll wait until the review's over.
Oh, God, I don't think the review's going any further.
It's, you know, you push the duckies, they go flying until they hit something, you push them again, you aim to get them into bread so you complete the fucking level.
That's really all 30 levels, and boom. Achievement.
Exactly. Matter of fact, I don't even think you have to beat all 30. I think you get to 15. I think you have all the achievements, I think, at that point, actually.
I'm, like, trying to get through it quicker, and you keep adding stuff to it. It's hilarious.
That's because I want it to be accurate. And no, my favorite part of the game is when the little duckies stick their head through the bread.
That sounds cute.
It's so adorable.
Quack, quack.
Quack, quack. Oh, wait, we have a button for that. Hold on, let me slowly scroll through the soundboard here. There's these here, there's these here. Oh, man, this one group lost a bunch of soundboards. They didn't pay for their thing. Down all the way at the bottom. Here we go.
There it is.
Yay.
Oh, the quack.
Doesn't hurt to breathe anymore. I'm getting okay.
$5. All what's right. Your verdict?
Fuck it. Why not? It's a cheap enough game. It's easy gamer score. Go for it. It's cute. I liked it.
Pick it up in the next couple of days.
It took me like 40 minutes to
get it for four. So there you go. Jump on it quick. Do what you got to do. That is it for the reviews tonight. Bree, what kind of questions do you have for Aki?
So is there any flavor to this hot sauce, I'd like to know, because I consider myself a little bit of, like, you know, a hot sauce aficionado. I enjoy the flavors, even with the extreme heat.
To be honest, the only hot sauce I've ever actually had a flavor profile for is jalapeno. And yeah. All the other ones just taste like a bit of heat. That's it. That's all I taste out of any of these. But again, I don't have a sense of smell, so I don't really have I can't really taste flavors. I mostly taste, like salty, sweet, spicy. Mm. Like you can, many of you can probably tell the difference between two different types of milk chocolates from two different brands. I can't. They just taste like milk chocolate. There's no difference between them to me.
so this just tasted like hatred to you, huh?
It's just pain.
Yeah,
at first, now I'm okay. Now I'm getting okay. My throat still is scratchy because of the water flaring it up. But I'm actually pretty okay right now. My lips hurt like a motherfucker, though. I legitimately feel like someone has busted my lip with their fist. Oh, it hurts.
Wow.
But other than that, I feel okay. Like, it's not burning my mouth that much anymore. Just a little bit in back of my throat, and that was because of the water, because it didn't do that last time. Last time I didn't drink any water because I was not being a dumbass. Because I literally had stated how water makes it worse, and then like 2 seconds later, I drank water. I'm
that
stupid.
That was a very good idea.
Yeah.
So heat and level, in comparison to what you've had before, is this like double or more than you think you've experienced?
Honestly, this should be close to 60 times what I usually eat.
That's a big jump.
Yes, it is. It's an unnecessary jump that I shouldn't have done. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to reiterate that many, many times when I'm on the toilet later today. Because I'm sure that's going to hurt real bad. But honestly, after eating it, it tasted maybe 3 or 4 times that. It didn't actually taste all that terrible after the, you know, immediate searing pain of my lips. Like, my lips are the worst part of this. Because they still hurt.
Yeah.
And I'm not used to them hurting. Usually they tingle a little bit. But, like, the inside of my mouth is fine. There's no more spice to it. Every time I cough, I get a little bit of spice because the back of my throat burns a little, but...
Sounds like you
again,
need
that's
more.
Water. No, I don't.
Actually, well, on that note,
we are going to wrap up this episode. Thanks, everyone, for coming on, hanging out. Dave K., thanks for coming on, chilling with us a little bit earlier on. Horror Acolyte, Pernell, Chris, Aki, thanks for being here the whole time. Bree, thanks for popping in at the end to hear Aki suffer.
You know something worse?
What?
I made this challenge a little worse on myself because I wasn't really thinking about it. The way I make tacos is I pour a half a thing of hot sauce into it just immediately after it's made. So I put my usual hot sauce in this too, a half a bottle of it, which is like 3 ounces, which is that I poured in it, which is a lot for hot sauce. So I had that. And I also bought some new cheese recently that is like Mexican cheese on crack because it has lots of extra peppers and stuff in it. And I put that on it too. And then I also put this sauce on top on it. So, yeah. I made it a little harder on myself because I wasn't thinking about it. I just tried that cheese earlier today. I was like, oh, this is good. And I chopped up the entire block because I don't have a cheese grater because I'm stupid. And yeah, I put that on all of them. Cheese is delicious.
Yeah.
Sweet. I don't want to drink that water. Yeah, it's called Flamin' Jack.
Bree, final words to end the show.
Well, I just want to bring us back. I did not, in fact, suck on my toe in solidarity. But I would have if I'd had the time.
I wouldn't have asked you to in the first place. With how sick you've been lately, I was going to tell you not to because I didn't want to immediately, just in case that ended up making you sick. Just because the capsaicin doesn't bother you doesn't mean it ain't going to upset your stomach when you've been sick recently. So,
you know what I like? Running. I like how I'm like, Bree, give us final words. And Aki's like, I'm going to go on a tangent.
Yeah.
Bree, give us final words.
I don't have any more now. Oh, gosh. There's a cat here.
The roof is on fire. The roof is on fire. The roof is on fire. We don't need no water. Let the motherfucker burn. Burn, motherfucker. Solo, always stroking my own Wookiee. I'm the root of all that's evil, yeah, but you can call me Cookie. The roof is on fire. The roof is on fire. this honky's gone to heaven. But if I go to hell, well, then I hope I burn well. I'll spend my days with JFK, Marvin Gaye, Martha Ray, and Lawrence Welk, Kurt Cobain, Kojak, Mark Twain, and Jimi Hendrix, Poltergeist, and Webster.